TGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 446, recorded on November 9th, 2016. Welcome to the 446th edition of the TD Game Podcast and the 479th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Burke.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So this episode, we're going to change the format around just a little bit, just to mix things up and see how it goes. There will be no podcast notes. We will just be talking about video games. Especially since Black Friday is coming in, like, what, 2 weeks? No, 3 weeks. Before we get into that, what have you been playing, Scott?
Currently, Civ 6 and Minecraft. It hasn't really changed.
Yeah, so anything... See, the thing I'm finding about Civilization 6 is that I'm finding something a little weird and a little new every time I play. Have you encountered anything that's made you raise your eyebrows or...
The AI just is making questionable choices. I was playing on, like, a peaceful map, and I was playing against Teddy Roosevelt, and he declared war on me for pretty much no reason. I had, like, 4 cities, and he had 1, and he had a couple of spearmen, and I took them out, and all of a sudden he's, like, trying to get peace, and I said, nope, you're losing your city, and I conquered him. It just seemed like a really... bad mistake suddenly. You're like, no, I made a mistake.
I had the opposite. I had 2 cities, right? And all of a sudden, let's see, who were they? The Viking? No, I was the Vikings. And the Arabs and the Norsemen? Not the Norsemen, because I was the Norsemen. I was the Romans, they were the Norsemen. And they both decided to attack me at once, one from north, the other from the south. And needless to say, I just rage quit at that point. And you know that the AI isn't subtle when it's going to attack, because you see a massive unit just happening to roll near you. The AI doesn't like to declare war until it's right on top of you. And yes, both were surprise wars. It's just really irritating, and I said it's not going to happen again this time.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating when you get it from peaceful leaders that seem to indicate that they wouldn't do that, like Gandhi and Roosevelt, but, you know, they do it anyways.
Well, Teddy Roosevelt was never peaceful.
Well, I mean, the AI, the agenda is supposedly he's keeping peace with everybody so long as you're keeping peace, and if you follow that agenda, you should be fine. And Gandhi and Teddy Roosevelt have agendas like that, and it just doesn't really seem to work out the way they say it's going to. So I don't know.
It sounds like Teddy was desperate.
I guess so. Yeah.
So how about you, TJ?
On the Civ question?
No, just what have you been playing?
Oh, okay. Owlboy. It's my favorite. It's the only game I've ever reviewed a 10 out of 10.
Wait a minute, what's the name of the game? What's the name of the game again?
Owlboy. From D-Pad
Studios. Oh, Owlboy. Oh, okay. I thought you said Owlboy. So,
of Owl.
Owlboy.
Yes. Incredible. Fantastic. Very charming. The game is a Metroidvania, but you're like a half owl, half human person, and you can fly at any point. So there's this aspect of just being able to lift off and move through the air at any time. But like it provides these awesome little limitations on you that like any Metroidvania, as you go through the game, you get new things that allow you to traverse areas better and get into new areas that you couldn't before. And it's just between the music, the art, just like the puzzle solving,
It better be good, since it's been in development since 2007.
Yeah, it took 9 years. I'm really happy for them that they got that done, because like that is a long time to work on a game.
Well, I mean they're reaping the rewards now because it's become an underground hit. Maybe not underground, just an indie hit.
Yeah, it's fun. It's definitely gonna, you know, I'm gonna say it. It's gonna be my game of the year for 2016, and I say that fully knowing that Dishonored 2 is right around the corner.
So, are you gonna contact D-Pad Studio and tell them? Guess what? We're your play game of the year. So, have you said you haven't played it yet, Scott?
Not yet, but I want to get it. So I'm just, I have to, I don't know. I'm gonna get it, like maybe next week or something.
Yeah, I haven't had time. I've been doing some unusual gameplay. Now, one game that I've basically more or less been sort of hooked on is Animation Showdown. And for those of you who don't understand, it's a collectible card game on mobile in which you have all the characters from Futurama, American Dad, Family Guy, Bob's Burgers, and what's the and King of the Hill. Mm-hmm. And one of the fun things is that you can make combinations of cards. Like, you can make Fry combine with Crack to make him Yesterday Man. you can combine Zoidberg with a weapon to make him Klawplach. You know, that sort of thing. To show you, I actually purchased gems, some gems from the game, which is one of the ways to get either a rare, an epic, or a legendary card. I also used their thing in which you can perform certain actions to earn gems, you know, sort of like an advertisement way, which is how I played Mobile Strike. Everybody knows Mobile Strike. That's the one with all the commercials with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he actually appears in the game as your mentor. And I will say it's a good game, just not for me, because it requires a lot of time commitment. You play Mobile Strike, it'll be alerting you time after time after time, just saying, hey, guess what? You have this ready, this way, this ready, this ready. So yeah, if you just want one mobile game that's going to eat up all your time, that's the game. Another game I actually played to get gems was Township. And that's your basic, farm type game. But I'm actually finding it kind of cute and fun. And I uninstalled Mobile Strike, but I haven't uninstalled Township, which is sort of a surprise to me, because usually I'm sort of meh on the farming games, but this one is basically farming meets SimCity, and you know, there's something about the way the art is and all that stuff, and putting your stuff on a train or feeding your cows and that sort of stuff. So yeah, I guess I can recommend Township. One good thing about Township, it hasn't been very pushy. See, Mobile Strike just hits you with the buy this, buy that. You know, Township isn't as it doesn't do the hard sell at all, which is actually very attractive to me. I know that you could probably buy the cash, which speeds up stuff. And, you know, if you're going to do the microtransactions, I like the concept of just speed up stuff. So everything you play in the game, you don't have to pay for, except if you just really want to run through stuff quickly. They had that in something like Tiny Tower. You know, when you and you could earn those tower bucks in-game. And you can earn bucks in game and in Township, which really makes me pleased, because you know you don't have to buy the cash, but it just makes things faster. And you know, I'm more of a leisurely sort of guy, so I don't have to. So yeah, another game I've been playing, we will discuss later in the show when we actually start talking about news. And it's related to something else we're going to talk about in news. Anything else that you've played that you'd want to shout out to TJ?
I started fiddling with Ashes of the Singularity Escalation recently, and I haven't gotten too far into it yet. I'm aware it comes from the same people who made what was that one? Supreme Commander, I think, right?
Supreme Commander, Total Annihilation.
Yeah, and it's that same sort of very, very, very large scale real-time strategy warfare. I haven't dug into it too far yet, but it looks beautiful, and I'm fiddling with it, and it looks good.
Yeah. So, we're going to go into the quote-unquote news part of this. Like I said, we're just going to be talking, and I guess the biggest thing we can talk about is N7. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that's come out, and it's looking a lot like Mass Effect Inquisition, except there's been a lot of talk that they're taking away the fetch quests, you know. And the biggest problem I had with Inquisition was that the combat was boring.
Oh, yeah, you hated Inquisition, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the fetch quest that annoyed me. It was the combat. It's so boring. And also, they didn't have the same cheat codes as the first two Dragon Ages, so I couldn't just, you know, just whip through it. But have you seen the trailer for the Andromeda Initiative?
I'm aware of it, but I haven't seen it just yet.
Okay, so there's a lot of information that you can read between the lines. For example, it talks about building bases and establishing, you know, having all these planets that you could visit and establishing bases, which sort of tells me it's a game in which you're going to colonize various worlds. And you know what I'm hoping is that maybe there'll be sort of like a horde mode, like when your colonies attack, you have to rush over and engage in sort of a horde mode, which would be great for multiplayer, actually. Mass Effect does have a horde mode. Duh, it was in Mass Effect 3.
Yeah, and I mean, the stuff you did in the main story mode or the stuff you did in multiplayer affect the main story mode, so it seems like it could be a good, like, evolution of that system.
I'm not worried because so long as they keep the same combat as they did in 2 and 3, it'll be fine. It's not boring combat. It's a nice third-person shooter. But related to that, even bigger that was announced was, hey, guess what? Mass Effect 2 and 3 are now backwards compatible on the Xbox One.
Oh, I bet you flipped your lid over that.
And I've been playing Mass Effect 2. Fortunately, you know, obviously you get to import your thing. And the best thing about the backwards compatibility is that you don't have to swap discs. It installs the entire game, you know, from one disc, your first disc. It installs the entire game. You don't have to swap your discs anymore, which is great.
Nice.
Yeah, and also, of course, you get all of your backwards compatibility. Now, one big surprise was that they announced Blue Dragon for backwards compatibility. And that's a game I haven't played in a long while, and I really liked it. I never completed it because at the end it becomes a real grind fest. But I really enjoyed the story and the music, and maybe I'll head back to it to see if I can, you know, complete the game. After, what, it came out in 2006, so 10 years later. And one of the big, big, big surprises, guess what? The Orange Box is backwards compatible, which has shocked a lot of people, actually. So,
they're making some games backwards compatible. It's better than nothing.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that they also made the Xbox 360 version of Limbo backwards compatible. And see, the thing is that that's on Xbox One as well. So it looks like people have started releasing games that are already on the Xbox One, but if people have it backwards compatible for the 360, why not? So that's good to see that they're not beholden to, oh, well, it's we already have a remastered version, so it's not going to come on backwards compatibility. I know there's a lot of PS4 people who are tearing their hairs out over ME2 and ME3 only being backwards compatible in the Xbox One, but, you know, talk to Sony. Talk to Sony. I'm pretty sure EA would love to have it on PS4.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate that Sony didn't consider backwards compatibility, from what I've been told, it's the PS2's architecture is not very compatible, so that really messes up a lot of...
But we're talking about PS3 to PS4, though.
That one should have been a lot easier to do. I don't understand that.
Maybe it has something to do with the mod support for Fallout 4 and Skyrim are restricted to just in-game assets. I think there's a connection there. I just don't know what. I don't know what Sony's being protective about. I never played it, but Joe Danger 2, the movie, is now backwards compatible. Rage is backwards compatible now. Rage, you know, that was supposed to be the big thing for Bethesda. Remember was going to be the big hotness a couple of years ago, and it just fizzled. It's like it just appeared, said hello, and then just vanished. And they hyped the hell out of that game. So, do you ever play Killer is Dead?
No, I have not heard of that game.
Oh, it's the sequel to Killer 7.
Never heard that one either.
I played Killer 7. It was a Suda 51 game, very quirky. I never got around to Killer is Dead.
Yeah. Also, Operation Flashpoint Red River is backwards compatible now. That's a strange choice. I mean, you know, even Operation Flashpoint just being on console is strange. It's like you'd have Arma 3 on console. It's just, it's a very PC game. So, now the thing is that they've also been talking about some other games, and I was shocked to hear that The Elder Scrolls V may be put to backwards compatibility.
That makes no sense.
On the other hand, go ahead.
Like, in a world where the special edition is out now, why would you go and do that?
Well, I have an idea why. You play Elder Scrolls V, but the Xbox 360 version doesn't have mod support, and it's just vanilla. And you say, you know what, I would like some mod support. And you say, oh, you know what, maybe I'll buy, you know, maybe it's a full game demo for the remastered edition, saying, oh, it looks pretty, I wonder what it looks like in 4K. So I don't. It's not going to be released, obviously, when the Skyrim remaster is released. It'll be like 3 months later or something like that. But like I said, it's nice to see games that are currently on the Xbox One also being released on backwards compatibility. And I think that people are finding these companies are finding that people are going to buy that. You know how many people are going to buy Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3 from the online store because they heard good things about them, or they already tried Mass Effect and they say, you know what, I want to try that too.
Yeah, I believe it.
So, anyways, we're going to move on to some more news. Now, Scott, you decided to talk about Animal Crossing.
Yes, they did a kind of a big release for this, for the game. They with the Amiibos, you can actually now find this little like genie lamp that'll possess the Amiibo, and you can go on and do like a game board in Animal Crossing. So now you have a mini game within the game. And they've also added if you have a fully built out house, they added an extra storage unit so you could put in more stuff that you've collected. If you're like a horde fiend and you just keep collecting things, you have more space now to store stuff.
Now let's be specific. This is the 3DS game that was released back in 2012.
Yeah, New Leaf, yes.
So, I mean, I've never, you know, I played the first, not the first, but I played one of the Animal Crossing games, and it was okay, you know, not my type of game. It required a lot, but I remember that the first Animal Crossing was the only way you could get to play old arcade games on the NES. I had them like, that was a neat little Easter egg.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they also added a campground where this little hippie dog is sitting there by his cabin, and he's selling a couple items on his porch. And there's also these trailer cars that come in with different characters that sell items. And I think it's some of the more harder to find items, basically an additional store. And for me, there's only one car that showed up, but you can get like two of them to show up, and so there'll be like two additional shops that change every day, and you have to, and you can't use bells, you have to use meow tickets, and this makes the game a little bit more interesting to get these meow tickets. I know it's a weird name, but to get these meow tickets, you have to basically do the stuff that you're kind of already doing, like fishing or breaking the rocks or catching bugs or you know, digging up fossils. You get rewards for doing these. Like if you maybe find a specific kind of fish, you'll get 3 meow tickets or whatever. And there's like 2 daily ones and then 2 weekly ones that you get to do that. So it helps entice you to play the game more. So this was really kind of a surprise. I did not expect them. I thought they were done with this. And apparently they've given a nice update to this game to make you revitalize it.
Yeah, and keep in mind, this game is 4 years old, which is an eternity in video game years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
It makes a lot of the amiibos that you can use for it interesting again.
Yeah. So moving on to some more news. I know, I don't know, TJ, are you still playing Rainbow Six Siege?
I am.
So you're probably well aware of the Season 4 content that was teased in the two new videos.
Yeah, I should be getting the, I have the season pass, so when it becomes, on whatever date that it's going to become available, I'll have it a week in advance. So when that happens, I'll probably talk about it.
Okay, so these guys are the Japanese Special Assault Team, Hibana and Echo, as well as a new skyscraper map. So, do you know anything about these new characters?
I haven't looked into them yet.
Okay. So, yeah, because the thing is, I know that you've been heavy on other games. I was just curious to see if you were still going strong on Rainbow Six Siege.
I get in there for a game now and then, but yeah, I've been in winter season, so review crunch time. But yeah, I'm interested. I mean, I've seen the map for the new setup, and it looks interesting. It looks like a straight up Japanese, like old school Japanese castle, and that ought to be interesting to play with.
Yeah, and they're also introducing a new caliber-based destruction system, which will be part of a free update. And according to Ubisoft, quote-unquote, the impact zone and fragility sphere are now weapon-specific, which means stronger calibers will create bigger bullet holes and generate larger impulses. This will create a more realistic experience with the destructibility of the environment.
That makes absolute sense, because before, you could just literally take a pistol with a silencer and pop holes in a wall, which made no sense. With this, you'll have to actually...
take a shotgun.
Yeah, take like either a shotgun or like an actual assault rifle to make a meaningful hole that you can see through.
Yeah. So, well, that actually ties into Hibana, because according to the video, you didn't say the video, she wields a supernova and a Type 89 as her primary weapons, and those weapons have the ability to blow oversized holes in walls.
Yeah, shotguns are fantastic for it.
Yeah. So, how about any other news that you know of that you want to talk about, TJ?
Yeah, I have one. This one comes from Game Watcher. Dishonored 2 is going to use De Novo DRM, and that's a big one.
Yeah, that was supposed to be the one that hackers say they can't crack.
Yep, it's a big deal because De Novo. I've heard it like there was a big story a while back that like a Chinese hacking site came up and said, De Novo will be the end of us. I think
I wrote that article.
Yeah.
On Game Watcher. I think it was either me or I just remember that story. I don't think it was me actually, but I do remember posting comments about it on Game Watcher. I mean, if a Chinese hacking site says, oh, that's it, we can't do it. You know, because here's the thing, hackers have huge egos, and they don't really care about buying games or anything. They just want to crack it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be a penny. They still want to crack it to see if they could crack it.
Yeah, and it's not just cracking it. It's cracking it within a certain window of time. You want to do it when the game is hot, because otherwise no one will download it.
That's not true, but okay.
Well, there is some prestige in being, hey, guess what, we cracked it.
Yeah.
Suck on it. Especially if it's an annoying crack. It's like the Ubisoft DRM. Yeah, you know, people weren't able to play the game because their Ubisoft server, but everybody couldn't play it except for the hackers who cracked it.
But De Novo in particular always gets people in a serious debate, because De Novo requires that you have an online connection in order to make the game work, which obviously means that if your internet connection goes out, you're not playing that game.
Yeah, that always bothers me. And here's the thing is that, you know, the only thing that should be used for is like MMOs or multiplayer shooters where you have to be online or else there's no point.
Yeah.
I like it better when developers, their DRM is not so obvious. Like in Batman Arkham Asylum, The game will play fine until Batman has to glide, you know, do a back glide, and the game won't let you, so you just plunge into the poison gas, and you think, what's going on here? And it's funny that someone complained on the forum about this, and the developer said, well, it's not a lack of our programming experience, a lack of your morals. So,
nice.
Yeah. I mean, you could look it up. It's hilarious. There's some other weird... some games actually just said, we know you hacked this, please don't donate. So you can play the game.
How are you supposed to deal with that if it's, like, is there, like, online...
Yeah, they have online donation. I know that Rift Tracks has a donate button, and on every Rift Tracks they say, hey, listen, if you got this somewhere else than our site, feel free to go to rifttracks.com and donate a couple of bucks. You know?
Yeah.
So, I like guilt-based DRM. The thing is that I remember the first person to really wield it well was World of Goo, in which the developer said, this is completely DRM-free, and you can pay any amount that you want to. And then they found people were paying $10, $25, $30, because that's what they thought it was worth for them playing. And that led to the inspiration for Humble Bundle, you know. So sometimes you can... rely on the generosity of the gamer, you know, and if you release something essentially free and say, hey, just pay us what you think it's worth, you'd be surprised how many people pay a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, some people paid a penny, some people paid $30, a couple people paid $200 and all that stuff. Obviously, it's not what the game is quote-unquote worth, but they were just, backing the developers that way.
Yeah. And Humble Bundle is pretty good. I mean, you pay a certain amount and you get a ton of games that you probably won't get through in a season unless you're just hardcore playing 24/7.
There are games I have from Humble Bundle that I haven't played at all yet, like Breach of Legend. I haven't played the PC version yet, and I could, but it says purchased on 2013. Okay, it's coming on 3 years. I haven't played it yet.
Yeah.
One of the articles that I'm going to bring up is from Cheat Code Central, and that's talking about Elder Scrolls 6 and the mystery that's going around it right now, in that Pete Hines is being very cagey about it, and he's saying, well, I only said there was a Elder Scrolls 6 at E3 just to get people off our backs, but you know that there's an Elder Scrolls 6 being developed. You know, the Skyrim made way too much money. They come out with Skyrim Remastered to whet people's appetites again. And the thing is that we don't know what's going on. I mean, they haven't teased any screenshots. They haven't done anything. It may not even exist for all we know, you know? And they bring up a point about Fallout in that they revealed it and released it too soon, so it didn't get the proper amount of hype. I mean, Fallout 4 had a lot of hype, but imagine if you had to wait a few more months as they dole out more information about it.
Hmm.
So, let me ask you a question. I know, Scott, you said you're done. You're done with Elder Scrolls. You just are tired of it, right?
No, that's Fallout.
Oh, Fallout. Oh, okay. How about Elder Scrolls?
I play that. I like dragons and fantasy and swords and whatnot. It's just the Fallout atmosphere is just very depressing.
Yeah. But what would you like to see from an Elder Scrolls 6?
Elder Scrolls 6, I think I would definitely like a new area. I actually would like to see maybe getting chosen as Emperor and running the Empire kind of thing. That would be kind of cool.
Okay. You know what I would like to see is have the entirety of Tamriel, something they didn't do since Daggerfall, in which you can explore the entire world. I mean, I'm pretty sure they're capable of it now.
I think so. I mean, that would definitely work with trying to become an emperor and you're going through your districts and whatnot and, yeah, re, re, uh, re, re,
reconsolidating them because of the, you know, the civil war that happened with the Nords and the assassination again of the Emperor. So, you know, they may need some consolidation again.
Yeah. I mean, EA's been teasing the hell out of Mass Effect Andromeda, and also they teased the hell out of Battlefield 1, according to the article, and they did it perfectly with Battlefield 1, in which they gave you just enough information to get you excited, right? And, you know, and it was a long period, it was a relatively long period, like, what, 7 months of just after the announcement, just giving you bits and pieces of what's going on in the game. Yeah, and, I don't know, I'm done with the Elder Scrolls, but I might change my mind if I see what Elder Scrolls 6 is.
Yeah.
I mean, I did buy Elder Scrolls 5, even though I had played to death. Elder Scrolls 4 Oblivion is the only game in which I 100%ed in achievements for a major, major game.
I think there will be certain aspects taken from Fallout to the next Elder Scrolls, like the whole settlements and building them up, and they might develop that more for Elder Scrolls 6, where you, like I said, might get into more empire management.
You know, but that carries into what you that you desire, because maybe you start off as a prince or something, and you start making your own territory, and eventually you have to go to war with other territories. The one thing about Fallout 4 was that when you were protecting your settlements, you were just protecting against bandits or zombies. You know, you never were protecting it against another faction. You know, it would be nice to say, oh, the green faction is building up on my territory. I better get ready and fortify this town, because I know that they're looking to capture it.
I agree with that, but also in Fallout 4, if you pissed off the Brotherhood or the Institute, they would start attacking your settlements.
Yeah, but you know, that wasn't really sort of territory control. That was just out of spite. They just wanted to attack you. You know, in this case, it would be almost an RTS in which you and other people, it would be sort of like Saints Row in a way, you know, in which you and other factions are vying over control over territory. Maybe this territory has gold, and this territory has soul gems, or whatever, you know, just resources that are specific to really make, you know, and you have to build, and you have to craft weapons for your army, or at least, you know, make the prototypes so that everybody is wielding it and that sort of stuff. You know, and then you have to go recruit magicians and, you know, magic users and ranged users and melee users and set them up, you know, sort of like making an Elder Scrolls version of Fortnite.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of, you know, empire management and faction and fighting more detail, and I don't know if they will do it, but I would really enjoy that. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Probably not, but you know what? I'm going to go email Pete Hines and tell him this idea. You know, the thing is, that it could actually be a basis for an entirely different Elder Scrolls game. Because we still have Elder Scrolls Online out there, so you have the MMO and you have the RPG. Why not a massively multiplayer game?
Well, while you're at it, you can tell him I would not say no to an isometric Elder Scrolls. That would be fine.
Yeah, how about a retro top, not even isometric, but top-down gold box Elder Scrolls game?
I'd be totally fine with that. There's a whole bunch of those. I mean, Tyranny's coming out.
Well, Tyranny's an isometric. Well. You know, I'm talking about going really far back. Can you imagine if they made a Temple of Apshai version of Elder Scrolls? Just stick figures and lines. Oh, God, I miss Temple of Apshai. Apshai. Do you ever play that game?
I used to play Castle of the Winds, and that was fun and very old. And it's a very old, like, Windows 90s game, and it was a little RPG, and it was very basic, you know. It was very, very low res graphics, but it was a lot of fun. You know, you explore castle, and it would pre-generate the castle, so you'd have a different castle every time you played.
Right.
So it was a lot of fun.
I played a game called Wizard's Crown, which is by Strategic Simulations, and it was very basic, but damn, it was fun, especially when I found a really rare dagger that just tore through other monsters. It was great. So, Scott, you also have another item that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, it appears that the EverQuest creator creators John Smedley, Bill Trost have a Steam. They're creating a new RPG, hits Steam Early Access with EverQuest, and this is from Polygon. And they're calling it Hero Song is an open world roguelike fantasy action RPG. And from the looks of it, like they just had one screen still of a dragon breathing fire on you, like on a grassy field. And it seems like they're going to make this an open world, but like single player, and it's early access for $20 on Steam. So I don't know how well this is going to do, since I know EverQuest was a big MMO, and this will be a very big change for them.
EverQuest still has a name. As a matter of fact, mm-hmm. EverQuest is still around, and that's 28 years later or something like that. It's incredibly old. Less 18 years, because the Ultima Online, which was the first MMO, first launched in 1997 or 1995, actually. So it's 21 years old. But EverQuest still has a cachet. And even the first EverQuest keeps on getting expansions. I remember being on Game Watch saying, oh, God, they've announced a new expansion for EverQuest and EverQuest 2. They're like zombies. They're just strolling along. People are just, I guess if you had a... Can you imagine being one of the first players and still playing EverQuest, 15 or 16 years later, and it's like the oldest... Crazy. I have a level 5,633 level character.
I wonder if they have a level cap.
I think they do, but it's exorbitant. I could always find out. EverQuest level cap. it kept on going up, so let's see. Da-da-da-da. Oh, come on, don't do this to me. Oh, well. Oh, here it is. It's at 105 now. So, the most recent expansion released for it is The Broken Mirror, which was released on November 18th, 2015, which is almost a year ago.
Wow.
So... But they release it once a year, almost like clockwork. In November, October, you get one expansion per year. It's incredible. Since 2000, the game first came out in 1999, making it 17 years old. That is dedication to if you're still playing after 17 years, that's dedication to an MMO.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder. I hope they gave the people who played in the first year a badge. So something special to denote, these guys have been playing forever. So related to Elder Scrolls, Bethesda says that there are two upcoming games that are as big as Skyrim and Fallout. And this is they haven't said what it is, but it's... But this is back in E3, so this is old news. I'm bringing it up now because I'm wondering what those games could be.
I'm trying to think. I can't. What? Yeah.
I think they're trying to come up with different games as well. So they're going to do something. I don't know, different. But I wouldn't mind games centered around maybe some of their smaller characters like the Silver Shadow or Grognak the Barbarian. Thought that might be interesting, but I don't know what they're gonna do. It's probably just something not like Elder Scrolls.
I almost forgot, BlizzCon is going on right now.
Oh, I had no idea.
It is. They just announced a new Overwatch character, Sombra.
I don't know the appeal of the Overwatch / these games. I mean, they're making the next Quake an Overwatch-style game. I guess they must make a crap ton of money.
Yeah, and they bring a lot of, competitive aspects to them. Like, BlizzCon, it was announced they were doing... They're setting up an enormous... I think they're actually through it now, but, they set up an enormous tournament for BlizzCon this year. And it got like a lot of viewers. Like, people are into it.
Do you still play Firewatch?
Firewatch?
Yeah.
The one where you walk through the woods is like,
yeah,
the kind of done.
Okay, well, they added a free roam mode for that now. You can go anywhere you like. It's just been released for PS4 and Steam. I think the Xbox One version already had it. So it's, I don't know, it's just a random thing that popped up as breaking news.
That game is mostly based around a very specific story, isn't it? I guess it would be okay to walk around in the woods, but like, if nothing happened, then that seems... I guess there's some novelty out of taking in the sights of that environment.
Oh, speaking of games that you're looking forward to, Dishonored 2 has started getting rave reviews already.
Interesting, and I don't know how I feel about that.
Rock, Paper, Shotgun said, it's the thief successor we deserve.
Yeah, I could see that, because Dishonored 1 was kind of like that already.
And the Thief reboot sucked.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, I'm a huge, huge Thief fan. I played the first one when it first came out. I played the second one. You know, the funny thing is, when the second one came out, I wasn't as impressed as I was with the first one, because it wasn't as scary. But years later, the level design grew on me.
Yeah.
And Thief 3, I actually liked. A lot of people didn't like it, but I liked it. Even though it was made to be on console, they actually did a better job with it than they did with Deus Ex Invisible War.
Hmm. Well, a lot of people hated Invisible War, didn't they?
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is, people are starting to look at it again and said, yeah, the level restrictions are suck, but the story's actually pretty good.
Yeah. But I can see that comparison to Thief, just because, like, Dishonored 2 seemed like it was a lot more combat intensive, but Dishonored 1 was very, very sneaky. Like, you could be crazy and murderous, and many people were, but there's a lot of options to sneak around in that game.
Here's some breaking news that might interest our listeners. Speaking of Black Friday, the new Nintendo 3DS will just be $99.99.
Get it. Do it. You know, yeah, you like it.
The 3DS is a good console. You know, you can get a lot of nice games.
Well worth it, just for, like, the Nintendo eShop. There's a lot of good stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
So the 2DS is got a cut to $80, so I'm wondering if how much the 2DS is going to be. And by the way, the $100 price is going to be available at all U.S. retailers. It's not going to be specific to, like, Best Buy or GameStop.
I would skip on the 2DS for some people, only because here's a specific thing that the 2DS cannot do. It cannot play the Super Nintendo games that are in the Nintendo eShop. So if you're looking to go back and play some retro games on a handheld, you got to do it on the new 3DS. The 2DS won't do it.
Yeah, it's gonna come in the black and the white flavors.
Hmm.
With the Mario characters on it. So yeah, I mean, I might consider getting the 3DS. I'd have to figure out what I was going to play. Oh, I already know what I would buy. I would buy the latest Pokemon game. Even though every Pokemon game is the same as the one before it. And yes, I know they have little tweaks, but they haven't changed that since I played the first one. And I guess they're going cyclical, you know, that the 12-year-old is now, what's it called? They're always aiming for the 12-year-old market or whatever, you know. But it always seems to be the same. Same Pokemon over and over and over again.
But they're doing crazy stuff, like they're making all the old Pokemons all tropical now.
Yeah. Are you talking about Sun and Moon?
Yes.
Okay. I've never been a catch-em-all kind of guy. I just want to finish the frickin' game. You know, what's it called? I don't want to buy two versions of the same game just to get the alternate characters in it.
I always have the same experience when I go into a Pokemon game. I look at it and I'm like, oh my god, it looks so fun and charming. I'm going to enjoy this. And then I play it for about a week. And then I'm like, this is boring. I'm done.
Well, the thing about it is that it's one of the actual games that I actually play when I'm outside. and walk around a bit and just sit down, play it a bit, and then put it away and come back to it. I mean,
but Jonah, that's what Pokemon Go is for.
No.
I've never been into the Pokemon games.
The Pokemans.
I guess I much prefer games like the Professor Layton series.
Much, I guess you much prefer games that are actually interesting.
Yeah, you know what? I see this thing here, and I'm shocked. And it's an ad, and it's Tyranny is coming out tomorrow.
Yes.
Is that true?
And it's like, what? Wait, huh?
Yeah, I preloaded it. My game's preloaded already.
Oh my god. I've been covering that for a while, and I didn't know that.
It's coming out tomorrow. So, Scott will have the entire details of the game next week. Do you still have that pin?
Yes, I do. I have it with a whole bunch of other pins that I've been getting from Loot Crate and Nerdblock, and I put it on my backpack, so I didn't know what to do with them, so I just put them on my backpack, and now I guess I can display the fandoms that I'm interested in with the various pins that I've gotten.
I have my collector's edition Mass Effect medal.
Yeah.
You know?
Stuff like that.
But yeah, Tyranny is something I'm looking forward to, and I didn't even realize. I for some reason, I thought it was going to be a 2017 game. So, for those of you who don't know about Tyranny, Scott, why don't you tell us about Tyranny?
Basically, Tyranny is, this land has been conquered by a ruthless, tyrannical leader, and they've conquered about 90% of this world until you come along and you're, like, getting this last vestige of, rebellion that is not under the rule of these people, and you create your character, and then you basically go through this scenario mode where you're saying this is how you conquered this last area, and that will then reflect on the rest of the game as you're going to play it out, because your decisions will matter. It'll affect these various places that you're going to be exploring. Say, like, if you torch a library, it'll be in ruins. Or if you save the library or something like that, it'll be in a different condition. And so it'll have effect on the story as you play the game.
Right. Now, before you continue on, also, just it's also by Obsidian.
Yes.
So you didn't pre-order it or anything, TJ?
No, I just did. I pre-ordered
it. No, I'm saying TJ.
I pre-loaded it.
TJ, you haven't pre-ordered it or anything?
No, I haven't. I was gonna wait and see. First off, I have a lot of things I'm going through right now. I wasn't expecting it to come out so soon either. I'll probably be picking it up in 2017, because there's no way I'm gonna get around to it in 2016.
I think some people got a preview copy, and they've shown the videos of it, so I've seen some of it. And it looked interesting to me. I was interested to pre-order it. That convinced me enough that they had created an interesting story. It's not just, going around and bashing good guy heads in. You're actually doing manipulations and trying, different things. And it's not just you're not just like some orc. You're more like a lawful evil kind of character.
Yeah,
I just how does it compare to Pillars of Eternity in terms of graphics?
It's I think it's actually better, if not equal better, level. It doesn't have like high demand, but then it's an isometric, so I don't think they typically have high demand hardware. But it looked about equal to me, but it looked really beautiful from what I've seen. They have some really crazy landscapes. There's this like desert that has all these big purplish gems just jutting out of the ground. And
it sounds a lot like Pillars of Eternity, actually. Having gems. Oh, no, actually, you know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of the City of Pain, maybe one of the planes from Planescape Torment.
Hmm. Yeah, that's also a crazy looking game as well.
Which makes me wonder what's going on with Torment, Numenera, or what was it?
Tides of Numenera.
Tides of Numenera Torment.
Yeah.
I did not back... You know, I'm shocked. I did not back Tyranny. I could have sworn I did. That's interesting. But I am also looking forward to the game, and I may purchase it when it's released. Although, you know, since I didn't pre-order it or back it, I might just take a peek at the reviews, but I'm pretty sure... Actually, you know, I'm pretty sure it's getting good reviews. It is Obsidian, and hopefully there's no day one patch or day one issues that they're going to patch later or stuff like that.
Yeah, here's to hoping. Yeah. I don't remember Pillars needing one, but it might have. They've patched it a lot, so I know that they're... very determined to make sure their game is in working order before they move on to the next project, it seems like. So I have high hopes that this will be a very quality game.
Yeah, and no reviews yet. That's fine. Oh, one thing that I see here is one article about it, and it actually makes me really want to play it now, is Tyranny's take on evil isn't just nuanced, it's disturbing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have always loved the concept of that. Like, yeah, you know your favorite Final Fantasy party, you know your Baldur's Gate party? They're dead. Kefka won. Deal with it.
Yeah, and actually that's something I forgot to mention. As you're leading the armies to conquer it, you're leading two different factions to conquer the last section, and they're trying to curry favor with the Emperor. And you're basically the one that gets to pick which one is going to be the favored army as you're conquering. So it's like you got two evil armies that are like vying for to be the top dog, and you get to make the decision of who that's going to be, and it's crazy. So you might feel like a Sith.
PC Games and has a Let's Play of Episode 1 for 60 minutes. They also have a guide of who not to offend in Tyranny. Because here's the thing, is that you're not alone. You know, you do have people who are on your side, who are other, what do they call them, lieutenants? No. For lack of a better word, lords. And you can piss them off with your actions.
Yeah, you answer to one of the lords, and there are several other lords, and if you piss them off, they'll tell that guy, and he will murder you dead.
So, yeah, I have high hopes for Tyranny. It's something different. And I know Scott loves it just because it's isometric. I'm kidding.
There's a lot of things to love about this one, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's still not. But it's.
I'm really willing to give it a good chance.
Yeah, you talked about Game of the Year, and you're putting forth Owlboy as it, and I'm wondering, Civ 6 is one of those rare strategy games that's probably going to be on the top of a few number one games of the year.
Yeah, it might be. I hope so.
And I'm wondering, and it would be nice to see if Tyranny is at that level. Because, you know, the funny thing is that retro-style games are starting to get to the point in which they can be considered for Game of the Year, like you did with Owlboy. You know, you said you were giving it serious consideration.
Yeah, because the thing is that pixel art has been around much, much longer than 3D graphics. And it means that people have had the time to develop pixel art that much more. Things that people are doing with pixel art these days transcend certain 3D games by miles, just because you can be so damn expressive with it in ways that you really can't do with certain 3D models.
Yeah, I agree. Like in the Trials of the Sky, they use 2D little anime portraits, and they get really detailed with the emotions and reactions on these faces that I still don't really feel with these 3D models. And I know the 3D models look great now, but I'm just not feeling that connection. It's just not there.
You know, when I did the Game Studio Awards for years and years, I would actually divide graphics into best graphics technical and best graphics artistic. Because, you know, one is not the same as the other. I remember Call of Duty, say Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 got best graphics at artistic. I mean, I mean technical. While something like Limbo or something like, you know, would win best graphics artistic. You know, because there's an old line I remember from years and years ago that a director once said, they have never perfected color, but they have perfected black and white.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember playing some games, let's talk about Fez, okay? So Fez has the graphics that you would see on 8-bit or even 16-bit, you know, consoles. But it does things with the graphics that would have been impossible to do on those consoles.
I know exactly what you mean, and I think some people felt that Sierra games did that. They did more with 256 graphics than a lot of other games that had even higher graphics did, because they had to work within a certain budget limit and certain graphic level, because, you know, that's just all they had at the time. And they would create really detailed 16-bit graphic pictures with their characters that just looked really good.
And a lot of these games don't age. I'll give you an example. Grim Fandango, 1998 game. It does not look like it's aged one bit because of its highly stylized 3D artwork. You know, they're meant to look sort of blocky because they're Calico dolls. You know, and a lot of the, and it's very cartoonish, which is why a lot of cartoon games haven't aged, because, hey, it's like hand-drawn. I mean, do you think the Banner Saga will look dated, like, 20 years from now?
No, because it's plain looking.
Nostalgia look.
It's a cel-shaded animation thing, you know? Mm-hmm. You can't go wrong. I mean, Dragon's Lair, the Laserdisc game, obviously doesn't look like it's aged. Well, sort of. I mean, but only because it's Don Bluth, circa the 80s, and his animation always had a certain look at the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, that might be the question of the week. What game have you played whose graphics have not aged for you?
I went back to one recently that was it's like halfway in between that. It's sort of a great turning point for video games. Xenogears, which uses sprite animation for the characters, but these characters also climb into giant mechs and fight giant monsters with them, and the mechs and the monsters that are giant come in 3D models. And it's sort of a interesting in between of like expressive character sprite art and that sort of aged, blocky PS1 3D model art.
How about you, Scott?
I'm trying to think of a game that like is old but hasn't aged for me. I guess that would be Suikoden for me. I always loved...
Hmm? I said, oh, okay. I know the game.
I just like that graphic level, and they were always very detailed with their sprites, because a lot of sprites, they're very static, but like in Suikoden, you can see their eyes blink, and you can see their faces go red when they get angry or whatever. They animate it very well, and it's very detailed. So for me, like Suikoden 1 and 2, those graphic levels haven't aged. I could play them and enjoy them and not feel like, oh wow, this is outdated or anything.
I think you'll really like Owlboy for that, because one of the interesting things that they do with it, the main character, whose name is Otis, the Owlboy, he's a silent protagonist, but like not in the normal way. They made him a mute, like he's actually a mute in the game, so he doesn't talk, but it's for a reason, is because he can't talk. So to get around that, they made a whole bunch of different reactions for him, like his facial features and like his hand movements, that just, he has all these clever little workarounds when other people aren't speaking for him, where he reacts to things. And it's so just, it's interesting to watch.
You know, I already gave the example of Grim Fandango from 98, but I'm going to give you an example of a game from 1981. And that's Tempest. That has not aged one bit, because basically it's a wireframe game, but the look of it, the sound of it,
oh yeah,
it's just, it's timeless. I mean, you could play, you could plop in a Tempest arcade machine in an arcade today, and people would flock around it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It has not aged a bit. And you know what hasn't aged either, now that I think about it? Do you really think that Donkey Kong, the original Donkey Kong, has aged all that much?
No, because, like, if you look at the newest side-scrolling Donkey Kong they released on Wii U, looks pretty close to what they released on the Super Nintendo, if only for the fact that they can do full 3D backgrounds on the Wii U that they couldn't do on the Super Nintendo.
I thought Jonah was talking about the old arcade one where he's sitting up on the top of the tower with the girders and whatnot.
I was talking about Donkey Kong Country.
Well, that hasn't aged at all either. But I'm thinking about their first Donkey Kong, 1980, 1981, 1982, something like that. And the cartooniness actually holds up. And, you know, I guess maybe it's because our brains have been molded to think about the retro-style games now. You know, but yeah, you brought up a great point. Donkey Kong Country hasn't aged at all.
Yeah,
that game looks like fun too.
Yeah. So that's our question of the week. I actually had something else that I was going to ask, but I forgot it. So, oh yeah, related to what we were talking about, actually, the other thing that I was going to ask is, so far, what has been your game of the year? And you can project and guess that maybe certain games will surpass it, but you haven't played them yet.
Dishonored 2 is going to be fun, and I know it is. I actually tweeted this to DFAT when I was done. I was like, I've seldom been more happy, upset, and thankful for the experience as I was when I finished with Owlboy. And I'm playing that with my wife now because I want her to see this, and I'm just having just as much fun the second time. And she, seeing the way she reacts to it, it's just so amazing the way it works.
And Dishonored 2 is coming out on Friday.
Yep.
That reminds me of 11-11-11 when they released Skyrim. God, that's Skyrim's a 5-year-old game now.
Yep.
Wow. I'm gonna say Civ 6 so far. I haven't really played anything that's drawn me to the computer as much as it has. It's been the first time, and I spoke about this with Dan. I told Dan, you know, have you played a Civ game in which the day one release was as addictive as it has been since, I don't know, since Civ 3? You know? Civ 4 had problems in its first iteration when it was released. Civ 5 definitely had problems. But Civ 6 just hit it kind of out of the gate running, you know? It just, and you can see where they can improve it, but even if they never patch it, it's still addictive, you know? And it still has that catchiness that the first three Civs had. You know, that Civ 4 and Civ 5 required several iterations to get.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Scott?
I'm trying to remember what else has been released this year besides Civ 6.
if you can't remember, then maybe it is Civ 6 for you.
I guess it's going to have to be, because I can't think of... I'm trying to remember if there was something, because I'm pretty sure... Trials was last year.
Well, keep in mind, you know, like we just said, Tourney's coming out tomorrow, so you may change your mind tomorrow.
Yeah, I might have to pick that one, so you'll have to get back to me on that,
yeah.
I guess.
I'm trying to see what major games are released in this year. Although, you know, I'm not going to really talk about all of them, but, yeah, actually, this year hasn't been really great in terms of games this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just seeing a bunch of games.
Oh, XCOM 2. XCOM 2 was released this year.
I don't care about XCOM.
Well, I do. The thing about XCOM 2... Go ahead.
I took too many 80% shots and missed to, like...
Yeah, that made me want to punch the screen. 95% shot... Oh, you missed.
Yeah.
Was my die roll really that bad? But XCOM 2 didn't quite grab me like XCOM did. I finished XCOM 2 and I said, well, that was fun. And I never really replayed it through again.
Yeah, I enjoyed my time with it too. It definitely had its frustrations. And I think the multiplayer felt tacked on. I really didn't care for it that much. I think they could have spent that time elsewhere and done more with it. But yeah, XCOM 2, good game. Not game of the year.
They just don't have as many great games that were released. I mean, there could have been some. This year has been sort of a dog. But then again, we haven't really gotten to the really great games yet. I mean, Oh wait, that's right. Dark Souls 3 was released this year.
That's a good one.
But here's the thing: you were really obsessed about Dark Souls 3 all year, and you kept on playing it, but. Apparently, you know, it's not your game of the year, apparently. Like, is it just more Dark Souls for you?
For a game to be my game of the year, I have to have had fun with it all the time. Dark Souls 3 is fun, but it also pisses me off because it's Dark Souls.
What? I don't get that logic.
No, I get it exactly. I know exactly.
Are you just saying it's more of the same? Is that what your problem is?
It frustrates me. It makes me mad, and it makes me it makes me break my controllers, and those are expensive.
And it's probably not a game that you want to go back to once you've completed it either.
No, it's the idea of going back to it makes me gives me stress just thinking about it.
See, that's what I'm talking about. It's a game that he has to want to go back to maybe a decade from now or something. Like he could go back to it a decade from now and enjoy it and have nostalgic, warm, fuzzy feelings about it.
Yeah, I have to forget how painful it was to take that journey before I'll go back to it again.
Well, we all know the best game of the year was No Man's Sky.
Tell you about a painful journey.
Don't make me come up to New York, man. No.
You know, I think the biggest disappointment for me this year was Deus Ex Mankind Divided. It just felt... It didn't have the vision that even Mankind, even Human Revolution had, much less the first Deus Ex. I mean, it seemed like it was going to be great. It seems like, oh, all these things you're going to do is going to have an effect, but no. No, it felt cramped and compressed and... I don't know. I find it hard to say this, but I have to say it. It felt just a little bit lazy.
Yeah, I think I've heard of that, yeah. Because I remember Deus Ex 1, boss battles were outsourced to a different company.
Oh, you mean Human Revolution. Deus Ex 1 was a completely different game.
That's what I was saying, the first one.
I don't know. Another really disappointing game is Total War Warhammer. I was really looking forward to that, but it was just it's too hard, you know. And it's hard even for a Total War game.
Let's see. I'm actually looking at the list and trying to think if there's anything here that I really enjoyed that much.
Ah, No Man's Sky. You know, the surprise game for me was was Vermintide. I mean, it was actually a great twist on the Left 4 Dead, type of gameplay.
Yeah, I enjoyed Vermintide a lot. That was kind of out of the blue too. It seemed to just sneak up and was out there, and people were enjoying it a lot. And I enjoyed it once I finally got in there.
Hey, by the way, Scott, are you playing King's Quest V, Chapter 5?
No, I have not completed Chapter 2. I told you was depressing me. I don't want to play Sophie's Choice King's Quest version. No, thank you.
So, I'm going to give the What Were They Thinking award to Respawn and Activision releasing Titanfall 2 in the middle of Call of Duty and Battlefield. I think they had too big a head on that and thought that, you know what, we're like the big boys, and they found out pretty quickly, no, Titanfall 2 isn't.
Even Activision is finding out that this is just too close. I mean, Battlefield 1, Titanfall 2, and Call of Duty Infinite Warfare were released literally
week after week after week. Yeah. You know, Titanfall 2 should have been released sometime in March or April.
Hello?
Let's see.
Really, Scott? I'm not hearing anything.
You know what? You just blinked out for a moment, and I think it interrupted my thing, so I hope you're recording this. I mean, it says recording a call.
No, my computer just completely froze up, so I'm not recording.
Oh, okay. Well, it says it's recording a call. Because this doesn't...
I just jumped to my phone so I can finish the episode with you guys.
Oh, okay. Which tells me why... I'm pretty sure it's recording, or at least I hope it is.
Yeah, that would suck. We've had a pretty good episode. That would be awful.
Yeah. I have to cut that out, too. I didn't play it, but... actually, it hasn't come out yet, so never mind. I got to go back up to... So that was what they were thinking with Titanfall 2. I don't understand the releasing of it, you know, and it could have used a little bit more polishing, from what I understand. I mean, here's the thing. Titanfall 2 has the smoothest gameplay of any of them, right? But it doesn't have the same gotcha sort of thing. And the single-player campaign has gotten a lot of mixed reviews. A lot of people love it. A lot of people hate it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Infinite. I'm actually surprised. Infinite Warfare. I worked on that one, and it had the best campaign of any Call of Duty game I've ever played.
Go ahead.
Just like the whole. A lot of people were turned off to the idea of Call of Duty in space, but once you're out there and you see what Infinity Ward did with the setting, it's freaking incredible to be. Like walking on the moon of Europa and look up and see the expanse of Jupiter overhead.
Hello, Destiny. Are you there, Destiny? Because that's one of the promises of Destiny was that you're going to go all over the solar system and three planets. Whoop-de-doo, one of them is the moon.
Yeah, and the difference between this and Destiny is that you actually get to explore the depths of space. You actually go out and do missions like in asteroid fields. And that was really cool. Like, just seeing the variety that the campaign went through to play with, like, what they were doing in the expanse. I liked it a lot.
You know what game snuck out and I completely forgot about and that's gotten rave reviews is Mordheim City of the Damned.
I heard mixed things. I've heard it was a great but super-duper-duper, like, more than XCOM punishing... strategy game, which...
People like that.
Yeah.
People like that.
Don't get used to having characters you like. They're going to die.
It looks great, though. But, yeah, that was one of the... and it's from Focus Home, too. Oh, I just got news. This is a complete side note. That they're actually making Mysterium into a video... into a PC game. Which will be interesting. For those of you who don't know Mysterium, it's in which one person is a ghost and everybody else are psychics, and the ghost tries to tell them with pictures how, where, and who, how, you know, how they died, where they died, and with what. Sort of like Clue meets Dixit, you know. And they're turning it into a PC game and also a handheld, a mobile game. And it's going to be very interesting to see how... And they also say there's going to be a single-player version of that game, which is mind-boggling to me. So,
interesting.
Yeah. So, anyways, any final thoughts on? Let's make game recommendations right now. So you already did Owlboy. You wanna summarize why you're into it so that we can have something that we can leave off on.
If you like a Metroidvania game, or if you just like. Any sort of platformers, if you like anything retro, or if you're just looking for something fun and charming, Owlboy is a great adventure game, and it won't take up too much of your time. It's about, I would say, about 10 hours long. Just a fun little title to pass the time.
Okay, Scott, tell us how much you're waiting for Midnight to play Tyranny now.
Yeah, definitely eager to play that. I stayed up late last night, so I definitely need to get to bed tonight. And it wasn't even a fun thing last night either. You know what it is. I'm not going to be bad and play the game, but I'll probably play it tomorrow and get a better idea of the game. If I were to do a game recommendation, though, I'd probably want to recommend the Trials in the Sky series, the first two games. I don't know if I did that exactly before, but...
I think you've raved about that game quite a bit on this show.
Yeah, it just, it's, I mean, for me, it's like a new Suikoden or a new Chrono Trigger. If you liked that kind of story deep of a game and just a nice combat system, it's that's what it is. It's a new one of those kind of games, and it's just a lot of fun. And, you know, it made me really happy. I mean, it's like, if something's going to be game of the year, it would be that one. But unfortunately, I think that was last year, so that would have to be game of the year 2015. For this year, though, games to recommend, I would definitely recommend Minecraft Story Mode, because that was a fun game, and I think you wouldn't regret it if you like, again, a nice story and watching characters grow and change. And I think your choices matter, maybe not as much as some people would like, but I think they matter enough. I mean, there are things that kind of carry on throughout the series.
Yeah. By the way, Trails in the Sky, Part 3 still has just a nebulous 2017 date.
Yeah.
I will take the obvious and just say, hey, if you're new to 4X games and you want to find out what all the big fuss is about 4X games, just get the granddaddy of them all, Civilization VI, and find out why there are people who are obsessed. A lot of people are very obsessed over Civ, and there's a reason why. You know,
even one more turn.
Yeah, you know what? Even playing, you know what? Civ 2 still holds up.
Oh, definitely.
You know, mm-hmm. So does Civ 1, but the problem with Civ 1 is that you can exploit it so easily. Ruins the game for me. You know, I know you can exploit Civ 2, but not to the extent of Civ 1. In which you could have cities
Civ 1 was completely broken.
You have cities with a population of 64 million, or end up.
you could do improvements in one turn if you click and undo end turn with your little unit or your settler. You can make him do an improvement on each tile in one turn. I know you could do that in Civ 6, but you weren't supposed to do that in Civ 1. And you could also do something like build a granary for 100 turns until you can instant build the pyramids when you get the tech.
Yeah. You know what I miss, though? I miss actual Wonder movies.
Yeah.
You know, they have them built in Civ 6, but I just want something a la Alpha Centauri / Civ 2, in which they have these movies which are narrated and they're really fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyways, you know what? I have to look up in the other thing for the because it's not on this docs. I have to go to the old docs for the boilerplate. You know, so just gotta load that up. Okay, scroll down, scroll down, scroll down, scroll down. Obviously, going to be editing this. Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave comments in the blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon.
I'm at Johnny Chugs.
I'm at Alpha Shard.
Yeah, and we will see you next week. Just a warning, after next week, we will not have a show because it's the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and we're going to give ourselves, as well as my server, a break because this is one of those months in which you have 5 Wednesdays. So that's an additional reason to have a break. So we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take it easy.